Hello, fellow movie fans. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk to writer Ashley C. Ford about the movie that changed her life, The Nightmare Before Christmas. If you've seen the movie, awesome, you know what to expect. But if you haven't, don't worry. I'm going to give you all of the details that you need to be part of this conversation. One of the things that's amazing about Tim Burton and the films that he makes is how he walks the line between darkness and light. And he does this so beautifully in The Nightmare Before Christmas. It's a movie that is about a character, Jack Skellington, who is the king of Halloween Town. He's an expert at making all things Halloween happen, everything gross and creepy and scary. But he's bored.
With the slightest little effort of my ghost-like charms, I have seen grown men give out a shriek. With the wave of my hand and a well-placed bow, I have swept the very bravest off their feet. Yet year after year, it's the same routine, and I grow so weary of the sound of screams. And I, Jack, the Pumpkin King, have grown so tired of the same old thing.
And he decides that he wants to take on a new challenge, and that comes in the form of Christmas. And I think what's amazing about the movie is that somehow it turns Christmas into Halloween and Halloween into Christmas.
You're welcome, one and all!
Where'd you spot him? Fast as we can, ma'am. Police, I know, a skeleton. Keep calm. Turn off all the lights. Make sure the doors are locked. Hello, police.
Reports are pouring in from all over the globe that an imposter is shamelessly impersonating Santa Claus, mocking and mangling this joyous holiday.
And as much as we're drawn into the movie because of Jack Skellington's creepy creatures and all of the visual effects that come from the stop-motion animation, the thing that I always think about and that almost everyone talks about when they think about Nightmare Before Christmas is the music. What's this? These white things in the air. This is Halloween. These are the songs that always come to mind when you think about this movie, and that's entirely due to Danny Elfman's whimsical and infectious score. One of the things that's so unique about the movie is Jack and Sally's relationship. Sally is this kind of Frankenstein's monster ragdoll. She's got stitches all over her body, and her body parts literally can come apart. And she admires and loves Jack from afar. They're both outsiders in their own way, and I think the movie does such a great job of talking about that, about what it means to be an outsider, to not quite fit in the light or in the darkness, and to kind of straddle both worlds. And that's something that Ashley C. Ford really, really loved when she first saw the movie as a kid, that it didn't just embrace one aspect of life or one part of being a human being. It's not just about bad and good. It's about that gray in between. So I want to know what role movies have played in your life. I have a sense from your writing that movies have been a big part of your life, but I don't know the specific details of that. Like, what is the role that they've played for you?
It's so hard to answer that question because I feel like I don't have a part of my life that's not influenced by movies. I really don't think I do. I was telling my fiancé the other day that most of my memories, especially my early memories, are kind of attached to a movie playing in the background or a feeling I got from a movie. So many of my memories are, you know, oh, I remember, you know, when we lived in this, like, what was essentially a studio apartment that I shared with my mom and brother. And I remember my brother being at one end of the couch, me being at the other end, us being tucked in with our pillows and blankets, and my mom putting in a VHS of Cinderella. And we would often go to sleep watching movies because we went to sleep so early and my mom still stayed up. So that's what she would kind of do to like calm us down and give us like something familiar to look at was to play our favorite movies over and over, which were usually Cinderella. We watched a lot of Home Alone on VHS to the point that like these movies, my boyfriend is constantly, well, fiance, whatever. I'm probably just going to keep saying boyfriend. But is constantly startled by the fact that at the drop of a hat, I can act out an entire scene from a movie that I've seen or a musical. Like, I know all the words. And he's like, how do you keep all that? How do you know all that? And I'm just like, because it's just part of me.
Because it was the soundtrack of your life. This is what you, yeah.
It was.
Well, you know, speaking of memory, I want to kind of have you take a little trip back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with, I'm assuming you know Mr. Rogers.
Oh my goodness. How dare you?
Right?
Well,
when
yes.
he accepted his Lifetime Achievement Award at the Daytime Emmys, he did this amazing thing where he asked everyone in the audience to take 10 seconds and close their eyes for those 10 seconds and think of everyone who brought them to that moment, to where they were, and helped them along the way. And I'm not going to ask you to do that, but
I
am going to ask you to close your...
You're trying to make me cry.
I know, right? Because that automatically takes you to a dramatic place, and we don't want to do an ugly cry here.
Right.
But I am going to ask you to take 10 seconds and close your eyes and think about the first time that you saw The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll chime in when the 10 seconds are up. Go ahead and close your eyes and think about that the first time you saw it. So what memories came up for you just then when you were thinking about it?
It actually was the trailer. Yeah, the trailer for the movie. Which came out when I was still in that studio apartment, when that's where my whole family was housed. I was probably 4.
Oh, my God. You remember that from being 4 years old?
Oh, I remember really far back. I have intense far back memories that sometimes freak me out. But yeah, I remember the trailer. I remember Jack Skellington's long legs. I remember him in the Santa costume. I remember the music in the background.
What's this? What's this? There's color everywhere. What's this? There's white things in the air. What's this? I can't believe my eyes. I must be dreaming. Wake up, Jack. This isn't fair. What is this? Haven't you heard of peace on earth and goodwill toward men?
Touchstone Pictures presents the enchanting story of two very special dreamers and the holiday spirit that brought them together.
How did you feel when you saw the trailer? Because watching the movie again, I'm struck by how scary it can be at times, but then also you're drawn in by the kind of grossness and scariness of it too.
Yes. I tell people all the time, you know, my fiance always calls me his little goth queen or like goth muffin or whatever. Even though like I'm not a person who wears a lot of black or like dumps
your soul
death
is
all
goth.
The time.
It's inside.
But my soul, he's like inside, you're so goth. Because I absolutely am always attracted to a little bit of darkness and a little bit of death and a little bit of the macabre. You know, like I remember watching so many scary movies at like a very young age. And sort of just thinking that they were kind of beautiful.
Oh, that's
like
fascinating.
Like thinking they were really interesting and kind of beautiful. Like I found like a weird beauty in like the gore and like the weird and creepy stuff. And I was scared, but I wasn't, and sometimes definitely scared to the point where I was like, could this be real? Are we okay? But, you know, like The Nightmare Before Christmas was different. There was music. It was animated.
Yeah.
Like, it was claymation.
Exactly.
And I felt, even as I was watching it, like Oogie Boogie's the only bad one.
Exactly.
Everybody else has a good heart. Or there are children who are mischievous. It's like, it just made me feel like there was room for creepy and all of those things to also be fun and beautiful. And like the music still messes me up internally. Like I sing it all the time. I can't help it.
Oh, somewhere deep in inside of these bones, an emptiness began to grow. There's something out there far from my home, a longing that I've never known.
Well, I think the subliminal message that I get from The Nightmare Before Christmas, and even really like Beetlejuice, Edward Scissorhands, you know, Ed Wood, when I think about the other Tim Burton movies, is that difference and being different is not ugly.
Yes.
Yeah, there's this amazing painter and artist, Enrique Celaya, and he talks about how you should look for the strangeness in another person rather than trying to find like the thing that connects you or the things you have in common. And I think that's what we're talking about. Even like the whole movie of Nightmare Before Christmas. It's like, it's what are the ways that Jack is strange and Sally are strange in the same way?
Yes.
And finding those connections.
They're so strange, you know. And as an adult, when I watch the movie, a lot of times, like, the lesson I get from it is, I think this is about cultural appropriation, you know?
Like, I was going to ask you about that because I know you did a whole Twitter stream about it. And I did. I never thought about that. Yeah, explain a little bit about that realization you had.
Well, you know, I was watching the movie and I was just like, oh, Jack is trying to take over another culture.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really get it.
But and he's really egotistical.
He's
really
arrogant.
That's something that struck
me
this time around, this week watching it. I was like, he's having an existential crisis and he has a huge ego.
Yes. He's so arrogant about it. Oh, well, I saw Santa Claus once. I know what he does. I can
exactly.
do it too.
I can do it.
You know what I mean? I could do that. Which is just so, to me, indicative of the conversations that you see happening online and off today about cultural appropriation, where people are like, well, I don't get it. Why shouldn't it be for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, technically, Christmas is for everybody. But in Christmas Town,
exactly.
These are the people who have been preparing and working and living in this culture and, you know, all their whole lives. So for you to come in, you know, from literally Halloween Town, which a lot of people think of as the opposite of Christmas. And it was just very interesting because I'm like, man, they blasted Jack's ass out of the sky. They blasted
literally.
Him out of the sky
yes.
because he tried to take another man's job. And as I was watching it, I just kept thinking, like, this is like the definition of stay in your lane.
I dream of the day when you will talk to Tim Burton about this. And
oh, my gosh. I dream of the day when I talk to Tim Burton. But I will talk about this with him.
You better.
Like, you know.
I always just pictured him to be Edward Scissorhands. Always. Basically. I'm like, that's Tim Burton.
Yep.
That was like his autobiography.
Yep. Absolutely. You know, Edward Scissorhands, it's a hard movie for me, but all of Tim Burton's movies are, to be perfectly honest, a little hard for me because they're all attached to my childhood so, so deeply that it's like the kind of nostalgia that makes you a little weepy.
Yeah. And I think they also like poke at that thing we all have that makes us feel like we're different and ugly or not normal or not accepted. Like, he knows how to poke at that.
Yes. I think the reason why I liked Tim Burton movies as well is because they spoke to some of, like, the pain I was feeling and didn't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. There was a lot of, as a child, there was a lot going on all the time. And, you know, things were tense and things were hard and we were poor. And I think that, you know, on TV, everything was kind of perfect.
Yeah.
And in these movies, things were not perfect. And people died and people left and people got hurt and their feelings got hurt. And, you know, they hurt each other and forgave each other. And for me, that just, it was so familiar. It was so familiar. And it made me feel like somebody else out there got it. I didn't know it was like, oh, white dudes, but I knew that somebody else out there got it. And I knew that somebody else, like, I knew that I didn't fully understand my feelings, but that I would be able to at some point.
I sense there's something in the wind that feels like tragedy's at hand. This feeling that I have, the one.
So I'm curious about who your favorite character or characters are in The Nightmare Before Christmas. My favorite is the mayor, the mayor of Halloween Town, which is really odd to think about.
I love the mayor.
I love how emotional and dramatic he is, and I love how his face shifts back and forth depending on like his emotions, if he's happy or sad, or like if he's delivering bad news or good news.
Yes.
I love him so much. He just feels things very deeply and has to be like yelling them all the time.
He does.
Where is he?
Looking for Jack.
Where is he?
Yeah.
Where is he?
We've got to find Jack! There's only 365 days left till next Halloween!
364!
It's time to sound the alarms!
So, who are your favorite characters, or who is your favorite character?
This is so hard. I mean, Jack is, I think, to me, a perfect protagonist because he's so flawed.
Yes. And he doesn't see
and
it.
Still
he just
so,
keeps
and
going
he doesn't
forward.
See it. He just keeps going. And I love Jack as a protagonist. I think that, like, he is the definition of you can have a good heart and still do bad things.
Hmm.
And that you can have all the good intentions in the world and still have an impact that you didn't expect. And also that, like, you can't. One of the things I always love, the song that I love that Jack does, is the Town Hall song, when he's explaining to the other residents of Halloween Town what Christmas Town was like, and they're not getting it. And so he changes the message, right? He tries to turn it into something so that they get it. Like, instead of Santa Claus being Santa Claus, now he's Sandy Claus.
Yeah, Sandy Claus.
You know
Claus.
What I mean?
Yeah.
And he's
and
like,
he makes the hand gesture.
And he makes the hand gesture, and like his face like widens and his mouth, and like he turns it into a scary thing so that they can get it.
And on a dark, cold night, on a full moonlight, he flies into a fog like a vulture in the sky.
And it was one of those things that even as a kid, I was like, oh, that's the wrong choice. Like, even as a kid, I was like, okay, you have a vision because you saw it, but they didn't see it. And this is not going to, like, even as a kid, I was like, whoa, this isn't going to work out. Because I was like, Christmas is not supposed to be scary.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the point. Like, they are diametrically opposed to one another. And there was something about his, like, arrogance, but also, like, when he recognizes that he's wrong, when he's in the cemetery and he's singing and, you know, what have I done? And, you know, he feels the full gravity of that and he owns it and he takes it on. And then after he feels that, he doesn't go, I'm just going to lay here and die, or I'm just going to, you know, whatever. He's like, I can fix this. I get what I did wrong now. I get what I didn't see. And that means I understand that this job isn't mine.
Yeah.
And that I never should have taken it in the first. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That moment of realization for me is really, really amazing.
But I never intended all this madness. Never. And nobody really understood. Well, how could they? That all I ever wanted was to bring them something great. Why does nothing ever turn out like it should? Well, what the heck? I went and did my best, and by God, I really chased
it. We have to talk about the music, which you touched upon a little bit there, Jack singing at the town hall meeting.
Yes.
I know you've talked about on Twitter that you love writing to music scores, and I can only imagine that this has been kind of in the rotation for you. Tell me about your favorite songs in the movie.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to ask you to sing them unless you want to. Then you can feel free.
I might just because that's what's in my heart. But
I know. There's some mornings I wake up and then I'm not even kidding. The first thing I hear in my head is, what's this? What's this?
What's this? Smell is everywhere. What's this? There's bright things in the air. I love
exactly.
It.
It's so infectious.
I actually, my favorite songs are probably... obviously, this is Halloween, which I think is a brilliant opening song.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And then Jack's Lament is amazing to me. Like, that's the, you know, Christmas time is buzzing in my skull. Will it let me be? I cannot tell. There's so many things I cannot grasp. First I think I've got it, and then it lasts. Through my bony fingers it does slip. like a snowflake in a fiery grip. You know, and it's just, I love that song.
I'm crying here listening to you talk.
I'm sorry.
And sing.
I love Jack's Lament. And then I actually really like the song right at the end when Sally, after she has basically sabotaged the love of her life to get him to understand that, like, this is a bad idea, she's standing on the top of that hill.
Yeah.
And
the moon
he
is
just,
in the background.
And the moon is in the background. And he just shows up. And the thing that I loved about, like, the Jack and Sally romance was that it was really a friendship. Even if there was a little bit of unrequited love on her end, it's like she was his friend. And she would have been his friend no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, they never had to get together. But in those final moments, he recognizes that, like, this is a person who cares for me so much that she did not let me destroy myself.
Yeah. Oh, I love that he goes to her. Yep.
I love that he goes to her in the end. I love that there's this big celebration. Everybody's so excited to see him. And he's very excited, but he starts looking for her. And when he can't find her, she's the only thing. Mm. You know, like, he has to go find her. And there's just something in that, you know, because he knows she would have come back. Like, she hadn't disappeared, but in that moment, I love the idea that in that moment, there was no celebration without her. And that was, I think, the recognition for him.
My dearest friend, if you don't mind, I'd like to join you by your side, where we can gaze into the stars and sit together now and forever. For it is plain, simply meant to be.
You know, one of the things that I love about movies is that every time you watch them, and especially as you get older, they change for you and you learn new things and you see things differently. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how this movie has changed for you as you've gotten older and you've kept watching it. How have you guys grown together?
I think the way we've grown together is that as I've gotten older, I've recognized more and more that nobody can be summed up by the best or worst thing they've ever done.
Mm.
And I think this movie is a great reflection on that, that there is like this, there is light and shadow in all of us, and that we will always be attracted to, you know, what's different. But what's different isn't always necessarily right for who we are. And we have to take a moment to really think about who we are and what we enjoy and what we love. And I think another thing, revelation, not even a revelation because I heard it from Fran Lebowitz. Like, I can't act like I was sitting around and I was like, aha! but Fran Lebowitz has this thing that she said in an interview where somebody asked her about happiness. And she said, one of the biggest mistakes we make about happiness or in defining happiness is that we think of it as a condition.
Mm.
And happiness is not a condition. It's a sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness is not something that you can hope to maintain at all times. We should never be thinking we should always be happy. We should just know that moments of happiness will come. They'll always come, and we can look forward to the next moment of happiness. And one of the things that I kept thinking about the last time I watched the movie was the fact that Jack sincerely thought he was always supposed to be happy and satisfied by his work.
And that drove him to make that really bad mistake.
It drove him to make a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
And it's like the lesson that I think he ultimately learns is, oh, I don't have to tear down my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
To find happiness or to find fulfillment or satisfaction. I just have to try something new. I just have to encourage myself to, you know, think about, you know, okay, we've been doing these same things for Halloween for this long. What if we changed something?
Yeah.
What if we did? Because that's ultimately what he realizes in the end is that, like, he still loves Halloween. And the only reason he loved the Christmas that he created was because it was so much like Halloween.
Exactly. But he is the Pumpkin King.
Yes, but he is the Pumpkin King. And there is a reason why he's the Pumpkin King. And it does have to do with his passion for Halloween and his ability to continue to make Halloween better and better and better. Like, it's the thing where you do what you can where you are with the time you have.
And with the gifts that you have, right?
Yes, and with the gifts that you have. And I think that that's what he got in the end, and that's sort of what I'm beginning to get about my life, that, you know, I sometimes get really caught up in all the things that I can't do all the things that, you know, I'm not good at. And I'm like, man, why can't I be good at that? Something would be easier. I would be more, you know, whatever, if I could do that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what I really have to understand sometimes about myself is that I do have a gift. You know, writing and communicating and connecting with people that way is my gift.
Well, it's about, and, like, further knowing who you are and accepting who you are.
Yes. Yes, there is a great acceptance at the end of The Nightmare Before Christmas that I understand in my life now so much more than I did as a child. So much more. And I love that that film reaffirms that truth for me, that you can accept, you know, where you are and what you are. And you can try a million different things. It's not wrong to try things. It's just that know where you are. Know who you are, know what your gifts are, and honor them by giving them your best shot in a lot of different ways.
Ashley C. Ford is the host of the news and culture radio show 112BK and the new podcast Fortune Favors the Bold. She's also written for nearly everyone, including Refinery 29, Elle, BuzzFeed, and The Guardian, just to name a few. I also loved, loved, loved her guest spot on the Dear Sugars podcast, so definitely listen to that one for an extra dose of Ashley's wisdom. Next time, we're going to be talking about the movie You've Got Mail. So you've got 2 weeks to go check it out before our conversation. You can find it streaming on Amazon Video, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Vudu. This Movie Changed Me is produced by Maya Terrell, Chris Hegel, Marie Sambalay, and Tony Liu, and is an On Being Studios production. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcast, and definitely leave us a review because that's what people care about. I'm Lily Percy. Be kind to yourself and go see a movie.